Welcome back to the OU Nachyomi Project and our study of Divrei HaYamim Aleph. In today's shiur, we study chapter 13, Perek Yud Gimel. As usual, our shiurim are sponsored with the help of the Cyprus Foundation in conjunction with the Tanakh Study Center, tanach.org. Let's begin with Pasuk Aleph, and then we'll go into more detailed explanation of the background of this chapter. Vayva'etz David m'sarei alafim v'mayot l'chol nagid. David took counsel with all the military officers that we'd mentioned in the last two chapters. We explained before that Sarei Alafim, officers of 1,000, and Sarei Meot, officers of 100, would be similar today to battalion commanders and company commanders. We also saw that all these commanders and many of their top soldiers all gathered together in Hebron to make him king. Politically speaking, this was a very wise move by David to make sure that the entire nation was with him and that his kingdom was accepted by everybody. Because of the history of the last decade or so, where we found a constant civil war between the followers of Shaul and the followers of David. David is making every effort to unify the country, and now David is making a very bold decision in order to make sure that this unity is not just about military might, but there's also something spiritual behind it. David gathers together all these military leaders and suggests that they take the Aron, which has been in the meantime in Kiryat Yearim, and bring it to Yerushalayim, the city which he just captured. David explains this in Pasuk Bet. Vayomer David l'chol ka'al Yisrael. David said to the entire congregation of Israel that had gathered, Im aleichem tov, umin Adonai Eloheinu. Two conditions. If you think it's a good idea, and also if it's quite clear that this is from God, nifritza, nishlecha aleichenu anisharim b'chor tzot Yisrael. The word nifritza is difficult to translate. We'll return to it very soon. Nishlecha aleichenu anisharim. Let's send out to our brethren who remain b'chol arzot Yisrael in all the lands of Israel, v'mayim ha-kohanim v'alavim barim migroshem, and together with them, the kohanim, the priests and the Levites, dikavtsu eleinu, and let's everyone gather together, v'nasei bet aron Eloheinu eleinu, ki lo drashnuhu b'mei sha'ul. Let's bring God's ark, the aron Elohim, back to us, ki lo drashnuhu b'mei sha'ul, because we didn't pay regard to it, we didn't desire it, we didn't seem to care about it during the time of sha'ul. To appreciate David's decision to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim, let's take a look at the words which the Navi is using. First of all, in the middle of Pasuk Bet, David's opening words to the Ka was Nifratza. That shortest Peretz Tzadi is going to come up later on in the story when we get to the story of Peretz Uzzah. Let's take a quick review of the events that took place up until now to appreciate David HaMelech's decision of bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim. Recall that the Aron is supposed to be with the Mishkan. And during the 300 some years that the Mishkan was in Shiloh, during the time period of Sefer Shoftim, the Aron was together with the Mishkan. In the very beginning of the book of Shmuel, there was a war with the Plishtim. The Jews took the Aron to battle with them in the hope that that would help them in war. Israel lost that battle because they were not worthy of God's help. The Aron was taken to the land of the Plishtim. And after several months of trouble that it caused the Plishtim decided to return it back to the border of Israel. That story can be found in Shmuel Aleph, Prakim, Dalet Hay, and Vav. In chapter 6, in Perek Vav, when they send the Aron back to Israel, they send it in an agala, in a wagon, and that wagon goes on its own right to the city of Beit Shemesh. The people in Beit Shemesh see it coming. They're very excited. It seems that they don't treat the Aron with the proper respect that it was due. A terrible plague takes place and many people get killed in Beit Shemesh. The people of Beit Shemesh say, we cannot handle the Aron in our city. And they took the Aron from Beit Shemesh and brought it to Kiryat Yearim. And there it had been resting during the rest of the time of Shmuel, during the reign of Shaul, and during these early years of David. Now that David is king over all of Israel, he wants to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim. In the meantime, what happened to the Mishkan? The Mishkan was destroyed in Shiloh. It doesn't say that explicitly in the book of Shmuel, but it's quite clear from the book of Yirmiyahu, from Perek Zayin and from Perek Chavav, it's quite clear that Shiloh was destroyed at that time. And the next time we find the Mishkan, it's in Nov Eir HaKohanim, which isn't too far from Shaul's palace. According to most opinions, Nov Eir HaKohanim was an area near French Hill, north of Yerushalayim today. After Shaul killed the city of Nov Eir HaKohanim, the Mishkan moved to the city of Givon. And by this time period, the Mishkan is in Givon, and the Aron is in Kiryat Yearim. The question arises, why didn't they either bring the Aron to the Mishkan, or why didn't they bring the Mishkan to the Aron? If the Mishkan is in Givon, and the Aron is in Kiryat Yearim, they're not that far away from each other, maybe 5-10 kilometers, all in the tribe of Binyamin, why didn't they bring the two together? I'd like to suggest three possible reasons. The first reason seems to be they simply just didn't care. It was more out of neglect than out of principle. There might have been a more of a political reason, something that would happen probably in our time period, where the people in Kiryat Yearim, who had their own thought that the Mishkan should come to them, and the people with the Mishkan, either in Nov or later in Givon, thought that the Aron should come to the Mishkan, and because they couldn't come to a decision, there was one center to serve God in Kiryat Yearim with the Aron. There was another center with the Mishkan in Nov and later in Givon. Another possibility might be that there was a certain Masoret, a certain tradition, that the people knew that ultimately the Aron and the Mishkan would both come to a permanent resting place in Yerushalayim, but they were waiting for the right sign from God. There might have been some understood tradition that once Shiloh was destroyed, the Mishkan and the Aron are not going to come together again until we build HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, until we build the final resting place for the Aron, which hopefully would be in Yerushalayim. And that might be one of the reasons why one of the first acts that David does as king after he's anointed in Hebron is to go and capture Yerushalayim, not just to unite the nation and build a capital in a central location, but David might have had a Masoret from Shmuel that the place to build the Beit HaMikdash is going to be somewhere in the area of Yerushalayim, and now he captures Yerushalayim in the hope that he'll be able to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim. And that would explain why, in Divrei Hayamim, the first story after David is accepted by all the military men and anointed as king, the first national effort that he makes is to gather the nation together and bring the Aron from Kiryat Yearim to Yerushalayim. There's no doubt that David HaMelech's intentions here are very sincere, that people are with him, and the question is going to arise, why does it fail, as we'll see later on in the parak. To help explain that, let's take a closer look at what's happening in Pasuk Bet. David gathers all the nation together, and he reminds them, if this is a good idea on your side, and also if this is from God. In other words, David is always taking his pulse. Is God with us, yes or no? We're going to see this topic coming up later in the parak as well. If David sees that God's not with him, David understands that something is wrong. If David sees that he's successful, and that people are with him, and he's successful in his battles, then that's a sign that God is with him, and he's going in the right direction. Let's pay attention to the word Yifritzah that David HaMelech uses in his opening address to the people. The Shoresh is Pei Resh Tzadik, which means to sort of break forth. First of all, the Shoresh Pei Resh Tzadik is very close to David HaMelech himself, because his great-great-great-grandfather, Peretz, the son of Yehuda, when he was born, we have the exact same word, that's how he got his name, Maprat Daleinu Peretz. But even earlier in Sefer Breshit, in the beginning of Parshat Vayetze, when Yaakov has his first dream on his way into exile, first God promises the land to Yaakov Avinu, even though he's leaving. Ha'aretz asher ata shochev aleha lecha etnenu lezarecha, chapter 28 in Breshit. Perchav Chet, Sukim, Yud, Tru, Tedvav, is when God speaks to Yaakov Avinu in Beit El. Then God promises Yaakov Avinu, Vayaz Zaracha Ka'afar Ha'aretz, Ufaratzta, Yama Vekedma Tzafona Venegba, Venivruchu Vecha Komishpot Adama Vazarecha. God promises Yaakov Avinu that even though he's going to exile, and even though he thinks everything is lost, God promises him that one day he'll come back to the land of Israel, and his offspring will be numerous and spread out in many directions. And then God promises he'll be with them and bring him back from exile. In response to that divine promise, Yaakov Avinu makes his famous neder, he makes his famous vow, where he promises God that he's going to build for him upon his return a Beit Elohim, a house for God. And the very first time we have the concept of a house for God in Chumash is exactly in Perek Chavchet in Breshit, where Yaakov decides, upon my return, I want to serve God. And he puts aside the stone next to his head where he was sleeping, and he consecrates that stone and says, this stone will be the cornerstone of a house for God that one day I will build. And hence he calls the name of this place Beit El. If there is a time period in Jewish history where Yaakov's dream is finally fulfilled, where the people of Israel have become numerous and they spread out on all parts of the land, and now they want to come and build a house for God, especially after many years of trouble and wars and fighting, and now finally reaching a time of quiet and peace, and the people want to reciprocate like Yaakov Avinu wanted to do and build a house for God, I think it's quite meaningful that David chooses this word Yifritzah in light of God's Nevuah to Yaakov and Beit El. Also, because of that pasuk in Bereshit, that may be why the pasuk here is emphasizing that we're bringing all the people, b'chol arzot Yisrael, from all the borders of Israel, from all the lands of Israel, we're going to come and gather now to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim. However, the same word has a negative context. At Mamad Har Sinai, when Moshe Rabbeinu was warned by God to make sure the people don't come too close, he tells them at the end of chapter 19 in Sefer Shemot, "V'gama kohanim anigashim el Hashem yitkadashu pen yifrot bam Hashem." Even the kohanim who are allowed to come closer to God have to be careful and prepare themselves, because if they're not properly prepared, God might need to punish them as well. And here we have the same word, yifrot, is to take an initiative and do something quickly and spread out, but also can have a context of something negative when someone's punished for not acting properly in the respect of God. The next phrase I want to focus on is at the end of Pasuk Gimel. Ki lo derashnuhu b'mei Sheol. We didn't desire it. We didn't care about it in the time of Sheol. We know in Devarim Perek Yud Bet, we mentioned this already in our earlier Shiurim, in chapter 12 in Devarim, when Moshe Rabbeinu instructs the people that when they come to the land of Israel, they have to rid the land of all the idol worship, instead establish one central place where God will be worshipped, consistently referred to as HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem L'Shaken Shmo Sham, the place that God is going to choose to make His name and reputation known. In the beginning of chapter 12 in Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu instructs the people how we're going to find this correct place by saying, L'shichno tidrashu ubat Hashama. Search, desire Hashchina, and you'll come to that place. When David wants to find that place now and wants to build the place for God in Yerushalayim, we use the word Kilo Durashno Bimesho in contrast to David, who now is going to Doresh it. This, we also explained before, is one of the key reasons why David was chosen over Shaul. And the ideal kingdom of Israel, even though we have a human king who runs the country, that king has to make sure that it's clear to the people that even though he's the king, there's a king above him, the God of Israel. By building a temple and a house for God above the king's palace, that'll be the way that David HaMelech is going to show his entire nation that even though he's king and powerful and strong, he's going to attribute all those successes to the God above him. So far, everything David is doing seems to be ideal. Let's continue now with Pasuk Daled. V'emru chol ha'kahal lasod ken, ki yashar ha'davar v'enei kol ha'am. The entire congregation agrees to do this because it seemed in their eyes to be the right thing to do. Pasuk Hey, verse 5. V'akel David kol Yisrael min shichor Mitzrayim ad lavo chamat lavi et aron elui mikirat yarim. David gathers all of Israel together. The word Vayakel is very interesting. Just like Parshat Vayakel in Sefer Shemot, chapter 35, when Moshe Rabbeinu gathers the nation to build the Mishkan, the Chumash uses the word Vayakel. And here, maybe for the same reason, because David's gathering the people to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim, we use a very similar word. He gathers them from Shichor Mitzrayim. Shichor is another name for the Nile. Ad Lavo Chamat. Chamat is a city in northern Syria. Lavo Chamat is a city on the way towards Chamat. That's the widest expanse of where the Jews are living in the time of David. Lavi et Aron Elohim Mikirat Yarim, to bring the Aron from Kirat Yarim, where it's been resting since it was brought there from Beit Shemesh when it was taken by the Plishtim, to bring it to Yerushalayim. Pasuk Vav, Vayam David v'chol Yisrael Balata. Here we find an interesting play on words, because in Sefer Yoshua, Balata is another name for Kirat Yarim. At the same time, they're going up to bring the Aron. There's a certain type of aliyah here, bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim, and it's meaningful using this double name for Kirat Yarim. Geographically speaking, it's also an aliyah because the area of Kiryat Yarim is a bit higher than Jerusalem. If you travel today on Highway 1 from Jerusalem to Tel Aviv, about 5-10 minutes west of Yerushalayim, you pass the area of Kiryat Yarim Tel Stone, and that area is a little bit higher geographically than Yerushalayim. La'lut misham, to bring up from Kiryat Yarim, et Aron ha'Elohim Adonai Yoshev HaKruvim Asher Nikra Shem. To bring the Aron of God, whose Shechina dwells in this Aron, is called Yosheva Kruvim, because the Kruvim are on top of the Aron. Recall that the Kruvim in Gan Eden protect the way and the path to the Eitz HaChayim. And in a similar manner, the Kruvim that are on top of the Aron are a way of telling us that these Kruvim are protecting what's below. Below, inside the Aron, under the Kaporet, is the Luchot HaBrit, the covenant between God and His people. And the way to return to the Derech Eitz HaChayim is by keeping the laws of Brit Sinai, which is represented by the Luchot inside the Aron. Asher Nikra Hashem, and that God whose Shechina is represented by the Aron, He is constantly referred to as Shem. God's name, or God's reputation that the Jewish people represent, is always referred to as Shem Hashem. For example, HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem L'Shaken Shmo Sham. And therefore the Aron is referred to as Aron Elohim Hashem Yoshev HaKruvim Asher Nikra Shem. Again, this idea will be important because the whole purpose of the Aron is to make a name for God, to make his reputation known. When the Aron is respected for what it represents, and the people understand what that represents, then the Aron will come and bring them good. When the Aron is misunderstood, as we'll see, and treated like a foreign god, that will finally usually lead to punishment. Pasuk Zayin. Vayarkivu et Aron Elohim al agala chadasha mibeit Avinadav. Now they have to transport the Aron, and they decide to use a wagon. In fact, they use a new wagon, an agala chadasha, a new wagon from the house of Avinadav, where the Aron was staying. Vuza v'achayo nohagim bagala. Avinadav has two sons, Uzza and Achayo, and they're the ones given the responsibility of leading and driving this wagon carrying the Aron. We're going to see that taking the Aron by a wagon is going to be a mistake. The question is going to be, what was the Havamina? Why did they bring the Aron with an Agala in the first place? Shouldn't David have known, as he'll do later on, that it has to be brought up by Levim? It should be carried by the Levites by hand. Here, once again, we go back to the parallel of when the Aron was brought back from the Plishtim. When the Plishtim brought the Aron and Shmuel Perek Vav back to the border of Israel, they too made an Agala Hadasha. And that new wagon was very successful. They sent it with the wagon all by itself, and in a rather miraculous manner, the wagon drove itself right to the border of Israel. Rashi already notes this connection, and he says that's what David thought. David thought that because it worked for the Plishtim, it should work for him as well, and it seems that that was quite a mistake. That doesn't mean that this is a terrible sin, and by using an agala is going against God's will. It seems to be rather reflecting a lack of understanding of how to treat the Aron in a proper manner. Pasachet, that David v'chol Yisrael mesachakim lifnei Elohim b'chol oz. David and all of Israel that has gathered now to bring the Aron is dancing. If anyone has ever been at a hachnasat sefer Torah, when we bring a sefer Torah into a shul, we dance and we sing and make a big celebration. In a very similar manner, David and all of Israel are dancing in front of the Aron with all their strength. V'shirim v'chinorot v'nevalim v'tupim v'mitzatayim v'chatzatzrot. They're singing with all types of musical instruments, with harps and cymbals and trumpets. They make a stop at a threshing floor called Koren Kidon, some spot on the way. And in the middle of all this, Uzza, one of the people in charge of transporting the Aron, reached out with his hand, lechos et Aron, kishamtu abakar. The oxen that were leading this wagon were having some trouble. Uzza thought that the Aron was about to fall, and he quickly, with his hand, grabbed the Aron to make sure it wouldn't fall. Vayicharaf Adonai b'Uzza. God became very angered at Uzza for touching the Aron. Vayakeu al asher shalach yado al Aron. God struck Uzza down because he reached out his hand to touch the Aron. Vayamot sham lifnei Elohim. And there he died in front of God, in front of the Aron. This story very much reminds us of what happens to Nadav and Avihu on Yom HaShmini. It seems like he had very good intentions, and why someone with good intentions trying to protect the Aron gets killed is a very difficult question to answer. One possible direction might be is that Uzza was responsible for taking care of the wagon, and he should have tied it in a way that it should not have ever fallen in the first place. And there might have been a certain laxity in how they prepared for moving the Aron, and Uzza was the one responsible. Or it's also very similar to what happened at Har Sinai, that warning that God gave the Kohanim, v'gam ha-Kohanim ha-Nigashim el Hashem mitkadashu pen yifrotz b'em Hashem. When it comes to being so close to God, you have to be on perfect behavior, and one little thing wrong can mean a death penalty. Let's take a look now in Pasuk Yud Aleph in verse 11 to David's reaction to this tragedy. Vayichar leDavid. David became very angry. Ki paratz Adonai peretz b'Uzza. Because God had burst out against Uzza. Notice again the word paratz like we had in the beginning. The story began with Nifritza and it ends with peretz Uzza. Vayikra lamakom ahu peretz Uzza ad hayom hazeh. Because of this tragic event that took place and the death of Uzza, even though he meant well and everyone was on such a spiritual high, and everything got ruined by the death of Uzza, David called this place to remember the event, and that became the name of that area from that time on. Pasuk Yud Bet, Vayira David et Elohim. David became very fearful of God, Vayom Ahu Lemor, on that day saying, Hech Avi Elai et Aron Elohim. How can I possibly bring the Aron to me on a day like this, with this tragedy? This is a sign from God, we're not ready yet. And as I mentioned before, David is always taking his pulse, is God with me, yes or no? Just like David sees a sign from God when he's successful, he also understands when there's a tragedy, God's telling him there's something wrong here. And therefore, in Pasuk Yud Gimel, V'lo hisir David et Aron elav el David, David put off his plans to bring the Aron to David, V'yateu el beit oved Edom hagiti. Instead, he left the Aron at the house of someone named Oved Edom HaGiti. We'll see later on in two Prakim from now that he's one of the Levites. Pasuk Yudalad, Vayeshev Aron HaElohim in Beit Oved Edom v'Veito Shlosha Chodashim. The Aron stayed in this area, in the house of Oved Edom HaGiti, for 3 months. Vayvarech Adonai et Beit Oved Edom v'et Ko Asher Lo. And during those 3 months, there was blessing in his house, and that we'll see was a sign to David that God is with him again. One interesting point about the name of this Levite, Oved Edom, recall that David's grandfather, whose name was Oved. At the end of Megillat Ruth, Boaz had a son named Oved. Oved had a son named Ishai, and Ishai gave birth to David. What's the source of the name Oved? Oved is probably short for Ovadia, Oved Hashem, and therefore the name Oved is very fitting for someone who dedicates his life to serve God. In the next two chapters, we're going to see how the Aron is finally going to make it here, David, and they're going to bring it next time instead of with an Agala. They're going to be sending it with Levim in the proper way. But because of that, I want to suggest a reason what might have been wrong. We're going to find in chapter 15 that David gathers all the Levites to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim to take it in the proper manner and to carry it on their shoulders. If we ask the question, what went wrong? Obviously, what went wrong was the fact that Uzzah touched the Aron and he died. He must have made a mistake. But why did God allow that to happen? If something so tragic took place, David understands there's something deeper wrong. The answer to that we're going to find when we study chapter 15, when David decides to bring the Aron in the proper manner, using the Levim. We'll discuss this more in detail at that time, but what I want to pay attention to at this time is that this gathering, as we noted in the very beginning, is a gathering of all the military men. We saw in chapter 11 and 12, the people who come to make David king in Hebron, the gathering of the tens of thousands and all the officers, the Sarei Alefim and Sarei Meot, are all military men. And for military reasons and political reasons, it makes a lot of sense that they're the ones who come and make David king. But when the same people are the ones that are coming and bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim, there may be a problem once again that we're treating the Aron as a vessel of war. For the same reason the Aron was taken captive from Shiloh, the same decision that the people made, let's take the Aron to battle because the Aron is going to help us in war, and that was a tragic mistake. For sure the people are much better now, but we're going to see that there may be a problem when the Aron is getting all the attention primarily by the military people and less so by the Levim. We'll discuss this more in detail when we study chapter 15.